Welcome to the Next Level Soul Podcast, where we ask the big questions about life. Why are we here? Is this all there is? What is my soul's mission? We attempt to answer those questions and more by bringing you raw and inspiring conversations with some of the most fascinating and thought-provoking guests on the planet today. I am your host, Alex Ferrari. In today's world, we're surrounded by negative and toxic entertainment and images and content that are coming at us through our televisions, through our phones, through our social media accounts, and it gets a bit overwhelming. And today's guest is trying to stop that, or at least trying to help the world a little bit. Kia Kiso is an award-winning producer who has over 80 credits in television, features, documentaries, commercials, and music videos, and is a pioneer in the conscious content movement. She believes in telling stories that answer these questions. Who are we on our deepest level? And how can we be the best versions of ourselves? She decided to use entertainment to inspire ways that will create more well-being in our audiences and ultimately in the world. Let's dive in. I'd like to welcome to the show Kia Kiso. How are you doing, Kia?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for coming on our show. And we're going to hopefully be talking about conscious media today and putting good things out into the world and figuring out how we can hopefully raise the consciousness of humanity through very powerful tools, which is media, which is storytelling, and getting into that. So right off the bat, first of all, how did you get involved in conscious media in that world, because you've been a producer? Well, why don't you tell people, first of all, who you are, what you've done, and then we can go into the next part.
Right, of course. So my name is Kia, of course. I am a producer. I've made music videos, commercials, short form content, corporate videos, documentaries, award-winning documentaries that I've actually been on your other podcast to discuss. Mm-hmm. And I'm developing TV shows and movies within my own production company, but I also partner with other people and sometimes I work for hire. But I haven't always been a producer. I have several. I'm kind of like different cat lives, right? I have prior lives. I was a camera assistant for 12 years in the film industry and worked on Scorsese's Aviator and House and Cold Case and Grey's Anatomy. And those sort of those shows have a through line with what I'm doing now. And I have production experience as well. And it all culminates in my producing career. And that happened about 10 years ago. But I even went to film school for this. I've been doing this since I was 12. I went to summer school for this when I was 12 as part of the Gifted and Talented program. So it's kind of like I get bit by it. And I did temp work when I first moved to LA and I was good at it. And they're like, come work at the Easter Seals Foundation. And I'm like, can't work in this cubicle. I've got to be on set. I've got to leave these different lives. So
that's how you got started. And you get, like, I always consider it a disease, an illness, being in the film industry is once you're bitten, it's done. You're done. It can't get out of your system. It will be with you for life. It can go dormant for years, sometimes decades, but it always raises its ugly head back.
There's no way to get away from it. There's none.
I was just talking to another filmmaker the other day about this, and I was like, you know, when the pandemic started, I was talking to filmmakers, and they're like, yeah, I know the world's coming to an end, but how can we shoot our movie? How can we get our movie? And I'm like, literally, the world is coming to the end. And like, we need to get, how can we raise financing for this next film? It's a sickness. It really, truly is a sickness. Sometimes very positive, sometimes negative, depending on how far you go with it.
I know. I have in-laws that are soldiers and ER doctors and so forth. And I hear the stories of their day. I'm like, that's how you go make money. That's what you do every day. I'm like, that sounds hard, but I'm very happy to go sort of like swim with the sharks, as they say.
Yes. Absolutely. You know. Now, over the years, you started off in the business, you know, like going down the path like you normally would.
Working
your way up the chain and things like that. At what point did you realize the impact that media was having on society as a whole?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was kind of aware of that even when I was 12. I was like, oh, this is actually a job. And oh, I can have something to say and people will sit around and watch it and talk about it or relate to it in some way. But this idea of I had to be responsible for the megaphone in front of my mouth, so to speak, happened when I was working on Cold Case. Grateful for that TV show, totally grateful for it. I worked on that for a year and a half. But But as a camera assistant, I was often on set a lot, right near the actors where they were acting. And it was a special episode where it was not only a murder, but it was kind of like a rape murder. But I had to hide right next to the actress while I was sleeping. And she wasn't very good at it. And you had the take after take after take. And I was sort of trying to spirit myself out of this situation, you know, like, la, 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 I'm not here. And at that time, I was taking some metaphysical classes and learning about quantum physics and learning about making your life the laboratory of your mind, what you think changes your life kind of thing, and learning about affirmations. And so I just started, you know, I was thinking of the affirmations I was doing as my homework, repeating them. And it sort of dawned on me, is media potentially an affirmation for society? Mm. Here we're doing this TV show about rape and murder, where it's sort of expected that people are going to die by passions, you know, fits of passions from other people. Or I worked on House. Every week, somebody's going to have a mysterious illness that this quirky doctor has to solve. And if he doesn't solve it in time, you're SOL. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was like, what does this say about society? And it doesn't necessarily fit into what I see as the world. I believe that we're born with a birthright, right? We're born with these God-given qualities of health and love and happiness and joy and prosperity and creativity. And now those are those are givens. Anything that we put on ourselves or we put on each other take away those rights, right? So I was like, is this media lying to us about what life is really like, that we should be scared and worried and scared of each other? And I was like, I can't be part of this. I can't be part of somebody that is benefiting from stories because I feel like it's hurting the world. Now, granted, sometimes there's just go have a good time, watch something fun. Like I saw 2 weekends in a row, Nobody, the Bob Odenkirk.
Oh, I heard that. I'm dying to see
that. So good.
Taken or what is it? Like, it's like it's something like that, right?
I almost don't want to describe it.
Okay, don't
watch the trailer and just go watch it. It's such a fun ride, but it is ultra violent and I enjoyed it, right? Like you can have those moments where you have your sort of like junk food, you know?
Look, moments. My wife was asking me, why are you watching Godzilla versus King Kong? I'm like, because I want to see Godzilla beat the hell out of King Kong. Like it's not brain surgery here. It's like, I'm not looking for plot. I just want to see a giant lizard beat up a giant monkey and it's going to look really cool. Like that is just escapism. It's pure escapism. Yes. So there are places, there are moments for that. And I think nowadays more than ever, we need escapism. And sometimes escapism is violence. I mean, you watch a Tarantino film, you know, you can look at it for its art's sake and what he's able to do in that, but they're ultra violent films. But that I feel is a little bit different because it's so stylized and so over the top that it doesn't even really connect as real in many ways.
Well, and that's what's important to, you know, an important distinction. And in my journey since then and me researching this, I realized that it's your reaction to the content that makes all the difference in the world, because your reaction to it might be very different than my reaction, right? So I could watch something equally as violent as Nobody and feel almost traumatized by it, right? Because it's heightened, it's comedy, I enjoyed it. But like when I watched something similar like Platoon, oh my God, I felt scarred for weeks and I still think about it, right? And it's still violence for violence sake. So, you know, there's even media psychologists that study this. Dr. Pamela Rutledge is really amazing from, where is she? I forget where she was from. We'll put it in the show notes. But she was saying like some people have a really bad reaction to a horror movie where somebody else might really enjoy it because they're protecting their date, right? Their loved one. And they're actually like getting off on the protection. And so there's actually endorphins that come out of that versus being shut down. And, you know, so
it's all ultimately it's in the power of the viewer. So, you know, I'd argue that a movie like Platoon, the intention that Oliver had with that was to shine a light on the travesty of war, to warn, to educate. It wasn't in an exploitative manner. It was in a manner of education. And sometimes you have to see those kind of things in media to shake you up. I mean, you know, there's some documentaries that, if you watch any of these vegan documentaries, I mean, I challenge most people who watch them. It's rough. It's a rough thing. So there's that kind of media as well. But I think it truly is about intent I think we, you know, you hit the nail on the head with intent. What is the intent of the creator? What is the intent of the artist putting this out there? Is it just, you know, a horror movie, like you said, someone can watch Jason and laugh their ass off, and someone else can watch, you know, Freddy and Jason and be terrified and traumatized for life. It's all relative on who is watching it. So what's the intent?
I think it's a bit of both. I think it's that intention, right? Because I feel like that's baked into the content somehow. Like there's this almost this energetic transmission that happens with anything that's put out there, and the intention is behind it. But it's also, how is it absorbed by that individual, right? Like some people can be allergic to some foods and other people aren't, or some people can eat McDonald's every other day and be thin and other people can't, right? And so I think we have to look at media, and I'm really excited to talk to people about media diet lately, and especially since the shutdown. I think people are a lot more hyper aware of how things affect them. But we have to be aware, like, what am I consuming right now? Is this a junk food thing, or is this a really healthy thing? Am I in mood for this? Have I had too much sort of junk food media and I need to unplug for a little bit?
I'll give you a perfect example. I started watching The Handmaid's Tale a while ago when it first came out. And I was, I think, in the middle of season two, and that thing happened in the middle of season two. And I just said, I'm out. I can't do this anymore. Yeah. I can't see the character constantly be beaten up again and again and again. And then we just, 2 years later, we just came back to it, and we're now ending season three. We're about to end start season four, uh-huh. which just started, but it's a different world we're living in, a different kind of mentality, but it is a very dark show. It is a show that is definitely not uplifting. There's very few chuckles in The Handmaid's Tale, very few chuckles, but we watch it. And honestly, the way I take media like that in is, I mean, it is definitely making a social commentary. It is educating people about what could happen, what great sci-fi does. I mean, 1984 and, you know, Blade Runner and these kinds, that's what great sci-fi does. But then we're like, right after that, we're going to go right into Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the Marvel show on Disney Plus, which we're waiting to watch. So, and that's going to be complete escapism. It's going to be, okay, it's fine. So it's, you're right. The diet is really interesting of like what you watch, how you watch. Yeah. I mean, I remember during the election, and also just the whole last year, I mean, I was watching CNN and NBC and Fox. I was watching all, it was an obscene amount of content, and I realized how much it was really damaging me. I was just like, it's too much.
It's great that you have that awareness.
I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, you know, so now we just like, what if it's something really important, it'll get to us. Like if the Martians land, someone's going to tell us. I don't need alerts on my phone. That is an awareness that we need to take. And I think we have as creators, especially the artists and the filmmakers and writers, honestly, any kind of art and any kind of content, we have such a responsibility to the audience, what we're putting out there. And some of it is just an expression of yourself as an artist. And sometimes that's going to piss off some people. Sometimes it's going to affect people. And I get that. But the mass audience, when you start dealing with huge projects and things that are going to reach hundreds of millions of people, shows, things like that, you got to start thinking about that.
Right. Yeah. And that's how I got into conscious media. And at the time when I got into it, it wasn't labeled that in many ways. I was sort of part of the group that was like, let's call it this. Let's start calling it the same. You know, we all need to use the same term and broad enough to where, you know, podcasts like your wonderful one fits under film, TV, and so forth. But it's, you know, and we spent a lot of time refining that definition. And this is what I focus my career on is, and this is how I define it, content that creates awareness, whatever you want to create awareness about, with a positive impact, with the goal of a positive impact. That's what I care about. There are some films out there that create awareness very well, but leave people shut down, right? Oh. The impact is not positive. Whereas like, it's great content. We all need to know it. Yes, please tell us about the environment. Yes, please tell us about the refugees. Yes, please tell us about these things. But I think entertainment works better when you provide solutions at the end. When you give people, it doesn't have to be a call to action, but just show that there's a little bit of hope or somebody solved this in some way. There are even newscasters that are making pledges to doing just that, you know, to prove that it's not just doom and gloom or to leave people in a bad place. Like, you know, do you want to leave them wanting to help the refugees, your audience, so to speak? Or do you want them to go for that next pint of chocolate ice cream because they just feel like that got pummeled, right? So, and I think that's in the strategy of how you tell that story, and there's an art form to that.
I remember watching Inconvenient Truth, and I was just like, oh, like, and like, they give you like 90% of like, the world is going to end. And then, yeah. and for like the last 5 minutes, but there's some hope. I'm like, dude, no, that's really unbalanced. Al,
a third of the way in the ice cream.
Al, I'm already off the ship already, man. Are you kidding me? Like, you can't just like, it's like a newscast. Like you watch a standard nightly newscast now, and it's like 27 minutes of just negative. And at the end, like, inspiring America. I'm like, I don't care about the Girl Scout who sold a lot of boxes. That's fantastic. I'm glad that she did, but it does not overpower the last 25 minutes that you know. So I think they do that for their own conscience. Like, you know, we are doing something positive. No, you're not.
We're doing something good.
No, it's I think there needs to be a little bit more balance in that world. And you know, I was going to ask you as well, social media, like, my God, what has that done to society? What, in your opinion, like, because look, social media is media. So it is media in one way, shape, or form. It's,
yes.
It might not be watching movies or listening to music or anything, but it's a combination of everything all put together. There are some really positive things about social media. Connection, mm-hmm. power to organize. I mean, revolutions have been fought, yes, around the organizational power of the social media companies. But the amount of negativity, the amount of impact that it's creating, the negative impact that's creating on society, it is, in my opinion, it's unconscionable. And mm-hmm. you know, I don't want to go on a soapbox about Facebook and Twitter, but I mean, essentially they're just selling your attention. They have your profile, and that their business model is to harvest as much information about you as possible and sell it to the highest bidder. That's not
and to keep you engaged over and over and over again, right? This addictive quality. I had to uninstall all of those apps on my phone because I'm like, what a flipping waste of time this is.
Oh, it's horrible.
But then I miss, what are my cousins doing, or what are my classmates from high school doing, or just sort of checking in on people. I was sort of missing the news of my community. But that was, again, a small dose of interesting information, and the rest of it is just like, I feel like,
oh, it's garbage.
Just at each other's throats, and nobody is on their best behavior because they're hiding behind, you know, their keyboard, so to speak.
Right. And the tribalism that's happening as well. Like, we have, all we see is the point of view that the algorithm thinks that we want to watch because they want to keep us engaged. So then, of course, it just separates us more and more as a people, as a species. And now in this country, I've never seen us more polarized ever. Mm-hmm. And it's not in my lifetime. You know, I'm sure there was, I mean, I'm sure right after the Civil War, it was pretty polarizing. But it's remarkable. And social media has all the responsibility, a lot of the responsibility.
Very much so. I mean, it's very similar to my experience on Cold Case, right? It's like, do I want to be part of this? Right. And some people are just happy to get a paycheck. And believe me, I was getting paid very, very well on that TV show. And it was very hard to decide to step away from that job and that career. But we have a really important responsibility to make sure that we're telling stories that make the world a better place, that add something, that add value. You mm-hmm. know, I'm not going to go do the next Jason. That's just me. But I, you know, I'm aware that a lot of your listeners of this podcast, this isn't your filmmaking podcast. I'm aware that this is a lot of people that are maybe spiritual, not religious, or just interested in seeking. And what I would want to tell them is, you know, listen to what Alex is saying when he says, I got a sense of that this news was making me feel icky after a while, or I don't feel great when I'm on social media, or I know I need a break from Handmaid's Tale. Like, tune into what is best for you. Look at media just as you would any other supplement or diet or any other tool that you use in your life, like exercise or education or whatever. You moderate it. Like, be aware that people are just going to serve you whatever serves them. But what serves you? Take care of yourself. And there's some great media out there. You might have to do a little digging that's actually going to benefit your life. Could be part of your spiritual practice. Could be part of your just personal growth. Okay, so watch Handmaid's Tale two nights in a row. And on the third night, maybe go watch a great documentary or go watch Blindside again or go watch, you know, Last Mimsy or something that's going to make you feel really fabulous inside. Like this, it's... you're consuming something. It's literally you're consuming it. So, you know, just know that there are people out here that are trying to give you good stuff to watch. And do your best to find it for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, the thing was, is that, you know, when you and I are of similar vintage. So, you know, when we were growing up, the amount of media that we had access to was extremely limited. I mean, before VHS, there was three channels. Mm-hmm. You had three shows to watch. Every half hour.
Oh, PBS. That's four.
Four. Okay. If you want to throw PBS in there, maybe your local syndication, maybe four or five 30-minute shows or hour-long shows in syndication or whatever. That was it. And then you hit that, maybe the radio or an album. Yeah. That's essentially all the media we had access to. Then VHS showed up, and then now that opened up doors, and then it kept growing and growing. And then all of a sudden – it wasn't just one show or one thing. It's a thousand things. And now we literally have more media in a day than we can consume, created in a day that we can consume in a lifetime. So there's so much media coming at us. Yeah. Where before, you know, if you watched two or three shows a night and it was on normal network television or on PBS, you didn't really have to think about consuming content because it was really just, you know, whatever. It's not that much.
Yeah.
But now it's so much, so many different ways, so out there sometimes. And, you know, some of the stuff on YouTube, I mean, the whole QAnon thing and how that whole world just destroyed people's minds. These conspiracy theories, all this, that's toxic. You know, flat earthers. I mean, sorry, if anyone's listening who thinks the earth is flat, I apologize. I'm sorry. You know, that's not a thing. I know you want to be contrarian, but that's not a thing. So you have to look inside yourself to really monitor the media that's coming in. And I don't think anyone's really been educated in that. That's not something they teach you in school. That's nothing.
No, media literacy. Nobody's talking about that. Nobody's talking about a media diet. Nobody's saying you are what you watch, you know, when they should be. They should be. And, you know, in some ways, it's, you know, we're already talking about how it's a bit hard to be a filmmaker. And we're, you know, you get bit by it and you can't really do anything else. But it, well, then consider that conscious media is even more niche in the fact that it's a bit harder to get funded. It's harder to get distributed because the decision makers don't believe that the audience is out there, even though anecdotally, I know they are. And I know by proxy markets, they are. I mean, look at self-help or look at how many yoga mats they are that are purchased and whatever. You've got to assume somebody that is buying a yoga mat is also probably interested in something a little bit more than just a Godzilla and a, you know,
right.
I haven't watched it.
It's so, King, you know, Kong versus Godzilla, Kia. Come on.
Okay. Yeah. Got it. I'm going to watch it. And then, but, you know, so we want to make more content like this. I want to make more content like that. But we have some people who are like, are they really out there? Do they really care? And it's the listeners of your podcast that need to say, yeah, that's what we want. Like, dish us, put something on our dish that we want to eat, we want to consume, we want to watch. So, you know, and I want to get to the point, and it's really funny that you know, you're like, come on the podcast. And of course, I love you and support you. And, you know, we support each other in so many ways. And I'm like, is it even conscious media anymore? Can we just call it media and all be focused on making the world a better place? And so I'm just like, it's all about creating awareness.
Right. Now, I wanted to also bring up a very pivotal part of your life. Something happened to you that kind of changed the trajectory of your life. Can you share with the audience what that was?
Yeah. Last September, this is now, end of April. Last September, I had a freak accident almost. Well, it was a near-death experience. I almost died, Alex.
Wow.
I almost There was a 40-foot oak tree in Malibu, California, on a very sunny day, that just decided its time was done, and it fell right around me. And I'm so grateful to be here in this moment, because had I been 1 centimeter to the left or to the right or forward or backwards, I would not be here right now. Wow. I would be sending you messages from the ether. I would be writing them in lipstick on your mirror, like for
which would be obviously very creepy. And I appreciate anybody on the other side. Please don't do that. Email works fine.
I don't know if anybody of your listeners have ever seen the Buster Keaton movie Steamboat Bill Jr. Very old, you know, he's a Charlie Chaplin, you know, sort of peer. And there's this big front of this house that falls, and he's standing in front of it, and he's standing right where the window of the house was, and he's completely untouched. That's kind of what happened to me. There was a big, huge trunk and a branch that had veered off, and I fit perfectly in the Y of this tree. And that's why, and even the firefighters that came said that I was extremely lucky that I almost wouldn't have made it.
Wasn't your time. Just wasn't your time.
It wasn't my time. And you know, it was really fun to drive around in Los Angeles after that, because I was a bit of a reckless driver, because I knew it wasn't my time.
You're like, I'm good.
I'm good. That lasted really good. So, but you know, what was really interesting to me, you know, there was a process that they had to put a staple in my head, but no bones were broken, which was amazing. Like I seriously should have had bad injuries, and I didn't. It was like I was protected in a way, and you can't just walk away from something like that going like, oh, that was just something. You have to go, what is the message behind this? Why did this happen? And a couple of things came really clear to me. One was I would have been really mad that if that would have been my day to go, I would have been really pretty pissed off, because I felt like I had a lot of other things to do. But I have a feeling that a lot of people would feel that way. And should I tell you my analogy?
Sure.
Like, so my analogy was, I felt like at that moment, nothing else mattered. But of course, what was most important to me. And I suspect it's like that for everybody. And so I came up with this analogy of life is like going to Disneyland. You're outside Disneyland and somebody gives you a free pass. And they say, hey, Alex, go to Disneyland, have a good day, do whatever you want to do. But at some point during this day, I'm going to tap you on the shoulder. You're going to have to leave. I might come in an hour. I might come at closing time. Who knows when I'm coming, but you'll have to leave with me. That's life, right? We're born. That means we're going into Disneyland. But ultimately, how you do your day at Disneyland is up to you. You can do the rides, and you can eat the cotton candy, and you can get the mouse ears, and you can go, do they even have Splash Mountain anymore? I heard they were getting rid of some of these rides.
I think they do, yeah.
So you can go do all those things, or you can sit on the bench and you can watch other people go by. And I've called that the settle bench, right? You can settle for life and or times of life and watch it pass you by because you don't feel like you deserve it, or you don't have a right to it, or you're not equal to it, or somebody else wants you to be there because they're comfortable with you being there, or they're benefiting by it. Or maybe you even have a job that's like a settled job because you're afraid of reaching out, you know, striving, doing something that's part of your zone of genius. I don't know if you know the big leap. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you're going to get tapped on the shoulder and you're going to have to leave, and you're going to review your life. And hopefully it's not when a tree almost kills you. You'd be like, did I do Disneyland right? Did I do Disneyland the way I wanted to do it? Not the way anybody else wanted me to do it, or the way I thought I should have done it. Or did I play it safe? Like, really, I think when you get tapped on the shoulder, you're not going to be like, I didn't go full out. And maybe your Disneyland isn't rides all day. Maybe your Disneyland is, I don't know, doing whatever. It's a small world after all, over and over and over again. Maybe that's your idea. But like, did you do it your way? Mm-hmm. And so now I ask myself, like, am I on the settle bench? Did that person just put me on the settle bench? It's not the resting bench. That's different. There's a different, you can sit on the resting bench. But it's like, are you living your day? Because you're not once it's over, it's kind of over, and it was up to you.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Yeah, no, I love, love, love that analogy, and I will steal it now. I apologize ahead of time, but I will steal it. It is a great analogy. You're right, because you just sit down, and it's not even if we want to go down the full analogy road, it's like sometimes you like, are you on a ride because someone else told you to get on that ride, and you're forced to ride that ride, or like my hell is to be on Small World again and again and again. That's my hell, literally. I think that's the hell for a lot of people. As beautiful as it might be, again and again and again, it would be hell. But that is the hell that most of society, most of humanity is in. They're doing things that they don't want to do. They're doing things out of survival, and you can never.
If somebody you love or you're partnered with wants to do the ride, and you do it because you love them or you want to please them, but ultimately it's your day, Disneyland. They're going to come tap you on the shoulder. That person might stay.
And there is times to sacrifice, and there is time to do something for someone you love, and you know, for your kids and your family and things like that. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, I'm talking about like working in a cubicle. You know, for me it was post-production. Like at a certain point, I got tired of editing other people's work. I got tired of dealing with the politics. I got tired of, and it was a complete false sense of power, because I'm like, well, it's my company, so I could choose whatever client I want to work with. And I'm like, but the way it was is like when something showed up, I'm like, I need the money. And I'll do it. And sometimes it was a little money. Sometimes it was good money, but it just got so exhausting. And then, I've said this on the show before, my whole life changed the moment I started to give back to society, to start give back to the people I wanted to help with my multiple podcasts and businesses that I started building online. And my entire world changed from that moment on, to the point where I could finally quit that and do Disneyland the way I want to. And I am now doing Disneyland. It's taken me 40 odd years. So, you know, it's probably the first 4 or 5 hours of the time at Disneyland that I had in the day. But I'm now riding the ride the way the park the way I want to do it. And now once you get a taste of that, you can't go back. Like,
you can't. And it was really obvious to me too, that it's not so much time. Like, where am I putting my time? To me, that became sort of a nebulous idea after the tree. I was like, because I was like, how do I make sure I'm not on the settle bench, right? So I was using time as an analogy. Is this a good use of my time? But that was too nebulous. So me now focusing on my energy and my focus was the best way for me to gauge something. Is this way I'm spending this moment, this hour, this day, the best use of my energy and focus? And sometimes it's crystal clear to me, like, oh, nope, this isn't it. Or, you know, love talking to you, but I was kind of done with this phone call 15 minutes ago. I'll call you tomorrow. You know, it's just like getting a sense of what works for me, what doesn't work for me, what's important and not important to me. And I actually show up as a better wife and daughter and coworker and everything when I'm feeling more at peace with myself and that I'm on point, right? Wouldn't you rather have me show up fully because I want to be there and it feels like it's my Disneyland, it's a great direction of my energy and focus, versus me feeling like I'm settle benching?
Yeah, I get you 100%. Now, do you have some universal truths, some things that for you are, you know, the bedrock of your time here?
Yeah. My universal truths are that the universe loves me, supports me, and nurtures me, and wants me to win, and is my co-producer in life. And that I can call on my co-producer at any time and say, hey, let's create this, let's generate this. And not only is it a universal truth, but I've actually put this in the laboratory of my life and tested it, and it works for me. So when I focus on things, when I vision board them out, when I make lists of them, they seem to come into my reality. And this isn't just a car or a house, or it's just, you know, peace of mind or a better relationship with somebody. And focusing on that connection with what I call divine source is and sort of the truth of who I am and what I am is the foundation for everything. Do I practice it all the time? No, that's the challenge. That's
we're human. Yeah, we're human. We can't be, no one's perfect all the time. That's why we're here, going through this experience right now, is to learn as much as we can. Now, do you feel that people, two ways, on both sides of the fence, the consumer and the creator, there should be an intent involved with creating the media that they create. Now, it could be an intent of hurting people, propaganda. It could be that kind of intent, or it could be intent of entertaining, escapism, whatever that, but this should creators think about what they're putting out there and how people can react to it? And as consumers, should there be an intent on how they consume media?
Yes, I think people, that's different. That's sort of a different play on the term conscious media, right? It's mm-hmm. like, are you conscious about the way you're creating it?
Right.
You know, even I feel like when I feed my crews well, that shows up on screen. I feel like when I get my crews together in the morning and we do a gratitude, little circle, and we appreciate ourselves and the people around us, and we set the intention for the day, I feel like that shows up on screen. That's being part of being a conscious filmmaker. But it's also, what is the intent with the story? How do I want it to heal or teach or just show, shine light. You know, you always want to make sure you're not doing propaganda, but are you trying to shine light in a positive way? And then I think people that are watching media should have more consciousness around what is their intent. What is their intention for watching something? What do they want to walk away with? And, just being a little bit more conscious and mindful about that.
Now, do you believe that, hold on a second. I lost my train of thought because I had a senior moment. So please forgive me. That's right. I got it. So with my podcast and with whatever, all the content that I create on a daily basis, which is obscene amounts.
I know. You're up at 4 a.m. I know.
It's an obscene amount of stuff with all of the stuff I do. That's conscious media to me. That is because my intent was to help, was to serve. Yes. And it wasn't about like, how much money can I make? And because nobody in 2015 was starting a podcast going, this is the ticket. This is what's going to get me. Woo, baby. Like no one thought that. I started it because I wanted to help. That's why I started the whole thing. Sure, there was a business aspect. Sure, I wanted to make money with it, but it wasn't my intention. My intention wasn't like, I'm just going to get in there quick and get the cash out because, our audience, the filmmaking audience, it's not known for being the most wealthy of audiences. they're generally broke artists trying to make a living. So again, that's also another niche that wasn't a very, very lucrative niche. So it wasn't about that. It was about being conscious about it. And I think that word conscious, it's not that everything that you put out has to be, rah, 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 feel good, blindside kind of content. Yeah. That's great. But what is the intention behind it? I think is that I feel, and would love to hear you what you think, is a better definition of conscious media. Because if you're making a horror movie to entertain and the people who are watching it are being entertained and the endorphins are being released and they're having a good time because they're getting a scare or they're, it's like a roller coaster ride. That is, I feel, conscious media. But if you're making a movie to literally terrify somebody and get into their psychology and make sure that they never sleep again, but with that attention. And there might be a couple, The Exorcist, I think it's Spielberg he's never seen it. He says it's evil. Yeah, I heard
that. The man that made Jaws, right? The man that's prevented hundreds of thousands of people from swimming. I still have trouble just going into open water. Like, that's funny. That's funny. It's just, and I think it's about fear. And I think there are some filmmakers that are happy to peddle fear. Mm-hmm. Well, also newscasters and, podcasters and social media,
journalists. Sure.
Yeah. That peddle fear. That's just a line I will not cross. Now, however, will I show a character going through difficulties and struggles and so forth? Yes, because that's the human condition, and we learn through story. From the dawn of time, humans have learned from story, and they love seeing their struggle being reflected in the stories that they're watching, because then they think, it'll happen for me too. I'll eventually win. You know, but are you peddling fear? And I've never seen you do that with any of your content. That's why I would call it conscious. Can you be conscious if you're peddling fear? Yes. But then are you having the positive impact, which is the second part of my definition? You're creating awareness and having a positive impact. I'm just not going to go with the negative impact part. You can right. still make money doing it, but...
Yeah, exactly. And I heard someone say this the other day. When you talk about money and people always chasing money, and it's all about the material things in life, and like, oh God, I mean, so much blood has been spilled over material stuff. It's honestly kind of ludicrous because one of my other guests said, and I told him I was going to steal this because it was so brilliant. He's like, did you ever see a U-Haul in the back of a hearse? So brilliant of a comment, because that's how we think in life. We're thinking about grabbing more stuff, more grabbing things, and it completely clouds what we're here to do.
You can't take your Mickey Mouse ears with you. You're gonna have to leave everything behind at the park. Sorry.
Everything. You're gonna have to come in naked the same way you left. Yes. You have to leave the same way you came in, naked and alone. I hate to be a downer, but that's generally the way it works for us. You come in alone, you leave alone.
But that's also just a really good awareness, and that's what hit me when the tree hit me. Is that my life? Is that nice? Is this life is my life? At the end of the day, I'm a bit. And it wasn't scary at all to be like, but I'm alone. Like, I really need to live my life the way I want to, because I'm going to answer to myself at the end of the day. And am I going to be like, good job, you did well on that one? Or, oh, shoot, I didn't do it the way I wanted to.
Right.
Now I have to start all over again. And I believe in reincarnation because I grew up in a haunted house. But I was like, oh, shoot, I was just getting started. Am I going to have to start all over again? How am I going to find my husband again? How am I going to, I have to do middle school again? Like, I was just like, nah. Just stick with this life and make it as good as I can, but just really focus my efforts and my energies.
No, absolutely. And I mean, I've said this so many times on my other shows that, you know, the moment I changed my perspective on being of service to people is when just doors. I mean, you've seen the people. I mean, you've been listening to my show for a long time, and you've seen it grow from.
Yeah.
When I had you on, when you were so wonderful and blessed to have, you know, to come on my show to talk about one of your other projects, to in the last 4 months talking to some of the most legendary people ever, and being humbled by that, there's a reason for that. And I'm not egocentric enough to believe it's me. It's about what I'm doing, what I'm trying to do, the energy I'm putting out there is starting to come back. And it actually started to come back. It was weird with almost instantly. The second I started putting it out there, it started to come pretty quickly. And then it's just kind of grown and grown and grown over the years, where I think that's where a lot of other, you know, podcasters, other people in the space that I'm in, they don't see that. There's jealousy, there's anger, there's other stuff that you're trying to chase the money. And I'm not doing
well, that. Well, but it's interesting. It's like if you focus on sort of like what you think the trappings are of prosperity, you're going to be constantly chasing the stuff. But if you're trusting the bigger picture, if you're trusting the, you know, your needs are going to be met and you're just going to have a prosperous life, then you listen for the next intuition, right? You just listen for that next guiding force and you're like, well, why don't I call this person today? Maybe they'll be interested in being on the podcast. Or what if I create this website? Like, you just follow the steps. And that's what it is. When I say I co-create with divine source, is I put an idea out there and I always say this or better, especially if it's like, I want the specific thing. I say, I want that or better. And then I just open and I listen. And some people have told me that I'm clairaudient. I don't know. Just sometimes I feel like I just get an idea in my head and I just start going down that direction, right? You got to start putting your car into at least first gear with an idea of where you want to head. And then you just be willing to tack along the way. But that's what you did. It sounds like you trusted you will be taken care of, right? Oh. You weren't like crunching the numbers of, I need this many people in order to get this much ad fundraise, you know, funds for, in order for me to survive for 6 months. Like you just started diving in out of service.
I started doing that. And then things started to change, and it's pretty remarkable. And even with this show, which is, a fairly young show, I'm back at the beginning, which is hilarious because I've been working 6 years on my other shows, which are extremely popular in their own world. But in this space, I'm just starting out again. And which was so funny, the moment I launched the show, guests that honestly I have no business getting started showing up. You connected me with a few. I started, another friend connected me with a few. I reached out to one and they just like, sure, I'll do that. And another one, like it's, yeah. I'm like, I have no business having that caliber of guest on the show and yourself and these kind of people that are coming on the show. I'm a young, brand new podcast, brand new
website. You're being of service with what your gift is, right? I think everybody has their own gifts,
right?
Has their own inclinations. I can't help do anything but organize things, right? Put budgets and spreadsheets together and bring people together and talk about post-production. So that's mine, right? Everybody has their particular gifts. The people that are listening, they all have their different gifts and people. And, most people, I think, know when they really listen deep inside, they know what their Disneyland is, right? Mm-hmm. And I believe if you just start to focus just little steps every day, every other day, one a week towards that, feeding it just a little bit, but in being open, right? Being sort of like having an open mind to it.
If
you're, and it always helps, and it also helps for me to like do a little vision board or list out sort of what that looks like.
With visualization, absolutely. Visualization or putting the intent out there. It's just remarkable how we just walk through life sometimes. I think that if you're constantly in a survival mode, if you're constantly only worried about surviving, that's what you're going to do. And trust me, I was in that mode. Everyone listening, I was in that mode for a long, long, long time where I was constantly like, how am I going to pay the rent? How am I going to do this? How am I going to get to that place? And you get into that survival mode, you can't open yourself up to anything else. So,
but it's really hard to get out of that. If you're in the middle of it. Like, who are our role models for getting out of that?
That's the thing. So the key is, and this is the thing, is – and I know it's so difficult to hear this, but I've been there, as a 46-year-old man who moved to LA 13 years ago without basically any money, selling DVDs to pay the rent. When I first got here, knew one other person in LA and was able to build what I've been able to build over the course of the last dozen years or so. The moment I had the faith that wholeheartedly had the faith that I'm going to be taken care of, things started to change. And then I'm not saying, oh, I'm going to quit my job and just, fight. Like, no, there has to be a balance, but you have to start making the shift, even if it's slowly, like you're saying, do a little something that feeds that part of the Disneyland mm-hmm. ride, a little bit a day on the side, and start building that up and building that up little by little.
Even if it's visualize it for 4 minutes. Like something. I'm really big into just set a timer for 4 minutes. Think of something in the future that you would love to experience and sort of be like, this is what it looks like, smells like, touch. What am I doing? And even sort of write a little scene, And I've had scenes where it's like, I show up to the new building of this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm cutting the ribbon and there's a big party. I just visualize that for 4 minutes. At the end of 4 minutes, I feel a little better. But, we all have tools that work for us. Begin searching. For me, EFT, tapping, works really well. Mm-hmm. When I feel like I'm just too stuck in an emotion or something like that, I get too scared about how is this going to work out. Sometimes you just need to disable your nervous system a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I do some tapping, visualization, some meditation. Sometimes it helps to talk to somebody,
Whatever works for you.
It worked for me personally, because I felt like I was just sort of rehashing and bringing it up over again. But yeah, find a good movie to just watch. Just get yourself out of gratitude lists. Gratitude, like find somebody to share 10 things you're happy or grateful for a day, or write it down. Like it really gets you out of that.
That energy really does change things, man. Mm-hmm. Like when you're grateful for stuff, the The energy of gratitude is so remarkable as well. And I know a lot of people listening might be like, well, yeah, that's nice for you guys, but I'm not in the place you were. I'm like, yeah, but I was in your place. I was in that dark place. I'm sure you were too, Kia.
Like, yeah. Let's do a whole episode on the dark places, man. It's like, there's no, you know, like no poster child for great things. It's just, no,
it's look, this whole experience of being human and going through life and walking and enjoying the good things and the bad things and challenging yourself, and there's obstacles and all of these things that happen to you in your life. This is tough. This is not easy. This is a really challenging experience, but it doesn't have to be completely paralyzing.
Well, and I will tell you, I believe that good, youth, truty, health, love, light, those are our natural set point.
Correct.
This is our birthright. Anything that is unlike that is, I say, like, anything unlike that is not the knowingness of God, and actually takes more energy and effort to continue up, right? So if you can find yourself somehow in the stream of your divine birthright, your inherent good, you'll actually have more support behind you, right? You can't turn darkness on in a bright room. It's the other way around.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, but sometimes we can have too much sort of in the way or built up or a history, a pattern of thinking over time. You have to do pattern interrupts. You have to figure out, what can I do to get myself out of that? You know, mm-hmm. I've actually put rubber bands on my wrist before, and I'm like, every single time I think that negative thought, I'm going to snap it. And I'd be like, I'm thinking that a lot. And so I would visualize. There was a year I was disabled, and every single time I was in horrible pain and I would get so stressed about it, I'd snap it. And I just remember, I would just imagine I was at a cocktail party going like, the symptoms went away. They wanted me to get neck surgery, but I just knew I'd find the right way and the symptoms are gone. I don't know. Right. Yeah, I could still have the same condition. And now I can tell you that that's true. I didn't have to have the neck surgery. So pattern interrupts.
Now I'm going to ask you a couple questions that kind of like rapid. I want to see what the first thing that comes to your mind is. Why are we here?
Creation. To create.
To create.
To be creators. Yeah. For creative expression.
And why is your soul, what is your soul's mission?
To be a filmmaker. To tell stories and, you know, heal people and uplevel the world through media.
Kia, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on our humble, humble little podcast that's just starting out. So I do truly appreciate
you
it.
Win.
But thank you so much.
No, this is great. You know, you had told me about the podcast a while ago, and I'm, you know, one of your biggest cheerleaders. So
thank you again. I appreciate it.
Stories have been around since the beginning of humankind, and has been there to help us and teach us values, morals, and the meat and potatoes of our society. And if you're ingesting nothing but negative and fearful content, what is that doing to you? Hopefully, you will look at the kind of content that you're ingesting on a daily basis and see what that's doing to your mind, your attitude, and how you are walking your path in this life. If you want to do a deeper dive into Kia, head over to the show notes at nextlevelsoul.com/010. And don't forget to subscribe and leave a positive review on whatever platform you are listening on. It really helps the show out a lot. And remember to trust the journey. It is there to teach you. I'll see you next time.